Welcome in, latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. We'll by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. And Stephen, he's here to share with us the anonymous coach comments from the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine, which is available for purchase now. Stephen, I know it's a hectic week for you. How's it going, my friend?
It's definitely hectic, Mike, but it's also pretty exciting at the same time. Like you said, the magazine officially on sale May 23rd. It may be out earlier or later at some places, and it's available in our online store. So always one of my favorite times. I've been working on this essentially since January, and the anonymous coach scouting is my favorite part of the magazine. So excited to break it all down with you tonight and what is some interesting coaching comments, I believe.
Yeah, so we're going to be able to hit on all 16 teams. We love when we're able to do that. But before we get into all that, I do want to ask you, Stephen, I know because this is like, for those that don't remember, I mean, this is literally years in the making. Not talking about the magazine, not talking about this 12-team college football playoff. And as soon as it was announced, Stephen said, buddy, let me tell you, this seeding thing is a huge debacle. Well, thankfully, they have amended that. They officially did it today. The seeding is going to be straight seeding. And I just want to throw this graphic up of what this would have looked like had they done it correctly. Had we all listened to Stephen Lassen last year. And again, would the playoff have ended differently? Who knows? But so Oregon was the number one seed, as they should have been, undefeated, won the Big Ten. Georgia, number two, which they actually were number two because they won the SEC. But Texas would have been number three. And Penn State would have been number four. This is just based on the final college football playoff rankings. And we still would have had Clemson because they won the ACC. We still would have had Arizona State because they won their sorry league. But, you know, Tennessee would have hosted SMU. Ohio State would have hosted Arizona State. Indiana would have hosted Boise. Notre Dame would have hosted Clemson. This would have been a heck of a lot better college football playoff, don't you think, Stephen?
Mike, 100%. This is a major flaw that is going to be fixed finally for 2025. The first round of last year's matchups, they would have been a heck of a lot better. I mean, who wouldn't want to see SMU, kind of the upstart, going up to Knoxville to play Tennessee? You also look at a potential semifinal between Georgia and Texas playing again for the third time. I think when you look at that quarterfinal and you see two Big Ten and you see two SEC, I think that's probably going to be the case a lot of times going forward. So in just the most basic sense, Mike, I think the way to think about this is if Georgia and Texas are 1-2 during the regular season and they play twice this year and the matchups are decided by a field goal or a touchdown, they shouldn't be 1-5. They should be 1-2 in the rankings. So, I mean, it's a common sense change. And also I think the down effect is some of those games in the first round also become a lot more competitive. You're matching up even teams. If we want to protect the regular season in college football and value it, this is the way to do it. You reward the teams that are good to be ranked at the top and protect them and give them a more favorable path to the quarterfinals and the semis. So a no-brainer, slam dunk, easy decision, the right call here.
Well, I wanted to open with that because I just knew how happy that would make old Steven. But what makes me happy, Steven, is if we did a cousin bracket, the number one seed, of course, would be undoubtedly JR. He's back again.
Memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
And JR is blessed, Steven. Daniel Dooley. Daniel, welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
Courtesy of the legend, JR. What a guy. What a guy, Stephen, he is. But can't thank you enough, JR, for supporting the show. But I think we have delayed enough, Stephen, because there's a lot to digest here with these coach comments. Is there any of them? Maybe I know you're dealing with so much. Are there any off the top of your head that when you read the coach comments, you were like, whoa, well, this it kind of like blew you away? Is are there any that stand out to you? And I'm talking specifically, of course, in the SEC here.
I think South Carolina had some really interesting comments, and especially around Lenora Sellers and also what this season might mean for South Carolina if you start thinking about roster eligibility and what could happen in 2026. I thought what the other coaches had to say about South Carolina was really interesting. Also, there was a comment about Lane Kiffin in there that I know we'll get to that caught me off guard as I was going through the coaches' comments. But there are some really interesting things here. And I think the takeaway for me is always, may not agree with it, but I think these guys giving you sort of unfiltered information is pretty interesting. A different way to look at the season gives us some stuff we don't think about as analysts and writers. It's kind of a nice behind the scenes look at this season. Was there anything that jumped out to you on first glance too? I'm curious.
There was. It was the Missouri section. So let's do these three first, Stephen, because you shouted out South Carolina. Let's do South Carolina first. And again, these are the anonymous coach comments in the upcoming Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine, which is available for sale now. But here we go. And again, we got two of these for every single team. Here is, I'm just going to read the comment here if you're just listening back later. The expectations are going to be sky high for these guys. And again, we're talking South Carolina here. If they can continue to get that level of production from their defensive front and run the ball effectively, that's still the best, most reliable way to win games in this league. It's playoff or bust for these guys because they're going to lose their best pieces at the end of the season. And then we got one more of these as well. And this is where Stephen was saying a lot of interesting stuff here on Lenora Sellers. Here's the quote. Lenora Sellers is a playmaker, but they really need to find a guy to replace Rocket Sanders. They're going to be loaded. They're going to be loaded this year because they brought in portal players to complement the defense. I think the mentality here is that they know they're not. They know they've got one season to break through with Sellers before he's gone, and they're going to build the best roster they can in the short term. So I'm already stumbling. We're one team in here, Stephen, but it's kind of like all in for the South Carolina Gamecocks, at least according to these coach comments, with pretty interesting. The rumors out there, Sellers already eyeing the NFL. We're seeing NFL people, they're already enamored with him, for what that's worth. At least draft people, they think he's got all the tools to potentially be the number one overall pick in the 2026 NFL draft. So, Stephen, thoughts on all these comments on South Carolina?
This was kind of what caught my attention on the first read through these comments. I think when you break these down, no real surprise. I mean, the anonymous coach in here talking about the defensive front and their rushing attack. And that's two questions sort of coming into this year. Obviously, Rasul Faison's waiver looms large, whether they get that or not. And having Dylan Stewart back is a good start on your defensive front. But are they going to be as probably good as they were with all the transition and pieces lost at defensive tackle? So I think it's interesting just to kind of see the coach kind of reaffirm kind of some of our preseason thinking. But I think on this season with Lenora Sellers, you're already starting to see the early draft talk, and he could be the first, second quarterback picked in 2026. Interesting to see other coaches kind of believing that, hey, this is it. This is the season. They got a breakthrough with Sellers, or he's gone to the NFL. I don't know that I would necessarily view this season that way for South Carolina, but I've started to think a little bit more about how this season could play out for South Carolina. And I think it is really important this team gets off to 5-0 start, because that back half of the schedule is difficult. Now, I do think they're going to get better, but I think this is kind of the upside for this team is a lot of portal additions, but every question that you have just keeps coming back to, they've got Lenora Sellers, right? He's just going to help overcome some of these things. So a lot of intrigue here for me for South Carolina this season.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me think, again, I try not to get over the moon on just one or two comments here, but I am one, Stephen, that's kind of been sleeping a little bit on the Gamecocks. And these comments are kind of making me reevaluate, because, again, Lenore Sellers, I'm also someone that said I think they should have went to the college football playoff. I thought they were the hottest team in the league heading into bowl season, and at least among the teams that were competing to get into the college football playoff that were on the outside looking in. But you know, that was a large part to Sellers. It seemingly all clicked for him, and he just took over the Clemson game and damn near won it himself. So, you know, if he has continued that progression, and let's say he gets even better, because this is only his first year starting last year. If he gets even better, man, and I like Sellers. I probably put him, I think at worst, I've said number two quarterback in the SEC. If he's the best, then I'm definitely sleeping, and I'll be dead wrong about the Gamecocks.
I think if there's a good chance that Lenore Sellers is an All-American at the end of the year, and I think if that's the case, then South Carolina is going to hit the over in the win total pretty easily. And that's a lot on one player, but I think we've seen this in other years of college football. You get somebody who is just capable of just overcoming these things, like all the defensive questions, and, you know, maybe not being as, you know, productive with the running backs, or, and maybe it's the receiver stepping up. It is hard to kind of run back what happened last year at the end of last year. Like you have to try to bottle that momentum up and capture it. It's not impossible, but I think that's kind of the theme for South Carolina is there's this question here. There's this question, but at the same time, if you have a quarterback like Sellers, and I think this is what the opposing coaches are getting at, is they think very highly of him. And if he's as good and his ceiling, he continues to move towards that. I mean, forget about those questions. Sellers is just good enough to go to the take South Carolina to the playoff this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do the second team you mentioned, Stephen, was Ole Miss. The great Lane Kiffin here. Anonymous coach comments, again, from the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. Here we go. The first program in the league that went all in on the portal players to take them to the playoff bid went bust. Now what? Austin Simmons is talented but unpolished, and it's going to take him some time to develop him. They're one of the best programs in the country evaluating the portal, and they've done a very good job integrating that talent and winning right away. But this is still an inconsistent program. The loss at Florida last year is an example of why Lane Kiffin isn't considered an elite coach. Oh, my goodness. Lane Whiffin. They may as well just call him Lane Whiffin. Here, Stephen, what stands out? I mean, this coach really put it all out there, didn't he? I mean, hell, yeah. Last year was the year, and until it wasn't, and how do they pick up the pieces from this?
Mike, it's almost like the coach that gave the scouting report on Lenore Sellers and the coach that gave the scouting report on Lane Kiffin, just totally opposite of how they view these things here, because the one on Kiffin, I think, is kind of brutal. I mean, just, you know, talking about the loss at Florida, the missed opportunity there. It is interesting to start thinking about Ole Miss from like last year to this year. And I think there is an element of, you believe they can still be a playoff team because of Lane Kiffin's track record there, you know, consistently getting to 9-10 victories the last couple of years. But to go in on the portal and miss, and now you kind of have to reset with a first-time quarterback who's very promising. But the other coach is like, while they've been good at evaluating the portal, they missed this great opportunity last season. So not too surprising, but also kind of, a little blunt by this coach to call him not an elite coach, and to go to Mike's term, Lane Whiffin there.
And I'll tell you exactly who said this, Steven. I literally have no idea, so this is all me guessing. But I'll tell you, it's Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly hates Kiffin's ass, and he's going to make fun of him every opportunity he gets. So here's part two of the anonymous coach comments from the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine on Ole Miss. They could be just as talented on defense and maybe bring Simmons along quickly, but they're still a step removed from the top-end programs. With the level of competition in this league, it's hard to see a roster like this one immediately come in and secure a playoff bid. So, man, that's tough, because, you know, you look at Ole Miss fans, they expect this team to compete. I mean, you see it in the comments. Hell, someone, I can't remember if it was Tim or who it was, but they said, hey, Austin Simmons is going to win the Heisman. I mean, this is the expectation the kid's walking into, where you know, people that cover this program, they believe he's going to be the most talented quarterback Lane Kiffin's had down there. And he's, the last I checked, he's had a couple of NFL guys. So Simmons, if he is the best, then that means he's a hell of a player. Will he be that right out the gate? You know, that's the million-dollar question.
I think the good thing for Ole Miss here is if they are 8-4 or even 9-3, it wouldn't be that disappointing of a year. Like, to lose all of those pieces and still finish like in the top 25, like I think they will, would be a pretty good acknowledgement that you're bringing back four starters, you turn over a bulk of the roster, and you have a first-time quarterback, and you're still in the hunt, essentially, to be a playoff team. I don't think that quote is totally like crazy. I think their defense under Pete Golding, I think in time, is going to be fine this year. I think Austin Simmons will be very good. I think the question is he on the edge of SEC all SEC honors, like maybe like fifth, sixth best quarterback, or is he in that top three? And it's going to be hard to get there because you have to go through Sellers, Lagway, Arch Manning. So a very crowded year. I still think, though, and this is where I would disagree with the coach, it's hard to see a roster like this come in and secure a playoff bid. I think this Ole Miss schedule gives them a chance, though. I mean, they get LSU at home. They get Florida at home. Yes, they're at Georgia. Yes, they're at Oklahoma. But if you can get to 10-2 with that schedule, and I don't think it's crazy to think they could maybe be there, it sometimes it happens the year after the year, and it could be right that for Ole Miss this year.
Yeah, I think that's what you got to hope. Without the expectations, without the last dance, all that nonsense, but it... buddy, it's going to be tough. I think this is a program primed to take a step back. And even a step back, you know, 8-4, 9-3, for their lofty standard. Now, that is a slight, that's kind of what I'm not saying they're going to go 4-8 or something crazy like that, but it's just hard for me to see them doing it. But like you just said, maybe it's the year after. That has often been the case for a lot of these teams.
Mike, I think also worth noting that we have a pretty good idea in the portal era what happens to some of these teams. I still think we're still in the like newborn stage of trying to figure out, like, when a team loses that much and they bring in from the portal, how does it all work? You know, we have some idea, but we don't have enough over time. So this would be a good, I think, test case example in the SEC to see how this works out for Ole Miss.
Yeah, you don't want to be this year's Florida State. You know what?
Yeah. True.
Those losers. All right, how about I mentioned Missouri. I thought that these were fascinating to me, Stephen. Again, anonymous coach comments from the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine on Missouri. One of the most underrated coaching staffs in the entire country. If they can flip the quarterback and rework the offensive line and win another 10 games, Eli Drinkwitz should be on everyone's short list. This isn't an overly talented roster right now and might not win as many games, but the program's health and identity are strong. Eli really carved out a spot in the SEC and built a reliable winner. And why this is so fascinating to me, Stephen, because, you know, Shane loves this guy. I mean, I like him too. I think he's a hell of a coach, but everyone else seems to hate this guy, whether it's... You know, media, but especially the fans. The fans can't stand this guy. Now, would they take him in a heartbeat? At about half these schools, I think they would. But I think it's interesting that, you know, just such a high opinion of this coaching staff from another SEC coach, especially after, you know, you lose your defensive coordinator to LSU, your offensive coordinator. I think he didn't do a fantastic job last year, but he did a hell of a job the year before. So clearly he knows what he's doing. But I thought this was pretty wild. You know, they're already looking to get Eli hired at another school.
Yeah, I think Eli is one of those coaches that you love him if he's your head coach and everybody else just dislikes him for the most part. You know, there's some coaches
right
who are kind of on the middle ground about. But I thought this was pretty, you know, positive here for Missouri. The opposing coaches, I think, given a lot of credit to Eli Drinkwitz and this staff. And I think we've seen that now back-to-back double-digit win seasons with some roster turnover, but continuing to win at a high level. I think there's a pretty good chance that this Missouri team surprises people again. And I think that's kind of what that second comment is hitting at, is I would argue maybe like overly talented is probably a little harsh. I think this is a pretty good roster. But also, I think if Missouri goes 8-4, 9-3, that's exceeding the early Vegas expectations. And it wouldn't surprise most people who, you know, keep up with the SEC or follow this program because of the work they've been doing in the portal. I mean, guys like Damon Wilson, Darius Smith, you look at this defense, it could be pretty solid again. And, you know, the next quote kind of talks about some of the other portal additions that they brought in. But it feels like this Missouri team is on really stable ground with a chance to surprise if things break right this year with all their portal additions.
Yeah, so here's the second half of the Missouri comments, anonymous coach comments here. Bo Prabula is a big, raw talent that could really thrive in Eli's offense. He needs to become more of a confident passer and rely less on his feet. He's such a physical runner, you wonder how often he can do that in this league and stay healthy. The ULM running back, Ahmad Hardy, could do really well in this system. He might have a breakout year. So there you go, Steven. That's exactly what you were talking about, where they're highlighting they've added some pieces. You know, the biggest diehard Missouri fan or the biggest Missouri hater, they don't know how these players are going to perform, though, in this conference, in a new team. And quite frankly, not even the coaches know. So, you know, how these guys ultimately do will dictate how well Missouri does this year.
100%. I think Bo Prabula is probably one of the biggest mystery players in the SEC this year, because I think depending on how good you feel about him stepping into the starting job, that's probably dictating how high you're going to pick Missouri this year. Now, Sam Horn may just end up beating him out. Maybe he ends up being better. But I like what I saw out of Prabula at Penn State on the rushing side of things. We just don't have a lot of data or a lot of live snaps and meaningful action with him as a passer. And I think that's kind of what this coach is hinting at here. You know, just a little bit of an unknown. How many rushing attempts can you rely on him for? You know, he's had, you know, around 90 or so in 2 years at Penn State. There's probably a good chance that he has probably 90 as a season at Missouri or more this year. I think Ahmad Hardy, plug and play at running back, Mike. I mean, he ran for over 1,000 yards at ULM. Much tougher conference in the SEC. Yards will be harder to come by. But I think as far as fit and talent, I think he fits really well with this Missouri offense.
Yeah, and again, if they hit the – heck, they don't need him to hit right out the gate. You know, they need him to be up to speed by September 20th and certainly by October 11th. But they got time to get there, including a bye week before arguably their two biggest games, or at least maybe their two toughest challenges of the season. So any way you slice it, I mean, this is a dream schedule for old Eli and company. And maybe the coach is looking at that and saying, buddy, they get 10 again. He may never have a slate like this that's going to line up a playoff run like they're going to have this year. You know what?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the one thing that jumps out to me when I look at that Missouri schedule is it's like your tougher games are at home. You do have some interesting swing games, you know, with Auburn, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. I mean, those are tricky. I could see Missouri stumbling a couple times there. But I think Missouri kind of comes into the year at a pretty good spot, though. They've been very good the last 2 years. They're a little bit under the radar. They've got a favorable schedule. They have this wild card quarterback that we don't really know how good he's going to be. That's kind of like, if I was, you know, trying to sort that kind of scare me picking against Missouri, because there's some ingredients there that I think you really like.
Yeah. All right, let's do Oklahoma next. Steven, I'm just picking at random here. Anybody want to throw us a donation, maybe? We'll do your team. Not required, but if you want to get your team to the top of the list. Here's Oklahoma. First comment, anonymous comment in the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine on Oklahoma. It's a hot seat situation for sure. They're banking on an instant impact from offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle and quarterback John Mateer, the way Vanderbilt brought in New Mexico State coach quarterback combo. That could happen. Their receivers were non-existent last year, but a lot of that was injury. They should bounce back and give Mateer some options. So, man, yeah, I mean, I would agree 100% with everything said there, wouldn't you?
I would. And to continue with our series on unsolved mysteries in the SEC, I think John Mathier is also in that category too. I love what I saw out of him at Washington State. And I think the other coach here is kind of questioning the same thing I am, is you're importing your OC and your quarterback and you can hit the ground running, but how good are they going to be right away? How do they adapt to life in the SEC? That's a big question this year. But also, with Oklahoma, they cannot have as many injuries at receiver and offensive line this year, right? It just seems like they totally bottomed out. They used all their bad luck last year. It has to be better this season, I would assume, right, Mike?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard that before. Yeah, right. And all of a sudden, maybe the last play card they've got is, we fired a strength and conditioning. That guy was a joker. Everybody loves when you hire a new strength coach and like, my God, you seen these guys, the shape. I mean, everybody's in good shape in the SEC.
Flipping over tires more.
But I am concerned about one thing as it relates, not necessarily that comment, but just something that's been on my mind, Stephen. We have hyped up this John Mathier to the point where, I don't know how it's possible that he lives up to the expectations given the situation he's coming into. I mean, anything short of like a Heisman finalist, I feel like people are going to think that he was not any good. I mean, is he at all overhyped?
I think it probably would depend on maybe where you have him going into this year. Like I would not have him as a top 4 or 5 quarterback in the SEC. And that's not a knock. There's a lot of good quarterbacks this year in the conference. I think maybe the way to look at this, Mike, is, Oklahoma's passing offense last year in conference games was last in the SEC. The bar is pretty low. They threw 5 touchdowns in SEC play last year. If you're middle of the pack in the conference and your defense replicates what it did last year, I think you would take that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because then that's how you get to the maybe like 9 wins or 10 wins.
I would agree, yeah.
Because the defense has been pretty damn good. But I'm a little slightly concerned, almost like they're completely different players, a completely different situation, but almost like Nico last year at Tennessee. Was he awful? No. Was he elite? No. But you asked Tennessee fans 2 months ago, they loved the guy. Everybody else thought he couldn't play at all. Now he's gone. He wasn't that good anyway. You know what I mean? Like it was one of those where like, I feel like we're setting him up for failure because of all the hype.
No, I think that's fair. I think it's fair to maybe it's fair to pump the brakes a bit on Mathier, like being a Heisman candidate. I think some people have him like as the second best quarterback in college football going into this year. I've seen it's a little rich for me, and I don't mean that as a knock or saying he's not going to be any good. I just think that having your OC that transition should be minimized from Washington State to Oklahoma. But the defense is on Oklahoma's schedule. It's going to start early with Michigan. That's way tougher than anything that they saw last year. So I think it may take some time. But also, I think the floor is so low that if you're just talking, yeah, he ends up being the 8th best quarterback in the SEC, that's still massively better than what you had last year. And you also probably have a little bit more cohesion offensively with Arbuckle calling the plays and not that disaster they had at the start of last season.
Mm-hmm. And now here's the second comments here for Oklahoma and highlighting Mathier here for a reason. Normally, it's not a great idea when a head coach goes back to play calling. But hey, Brent Venables, one of the best in the nation at it when he was at Clemson. He wants to have more control over what he knows. It's a huge gamble that John Mathier could come in and immediately acclimate to playing against the defenses in this league. We'll see if he can do it, because that's what will determine this staff's future. Buddy, this is straight from the mouth of Steve Sarkisian, negatively recruiting Oklahoma. How could it be anyone else? You know what?
It's no pressure, John Mathier, right? The offense was bad last year. And oh, by the way, your play might decide whether the staff gets another year in 2026. So no pressure at all. I think this coach actually summed it up pretty well for us, Mike. I mean, I think it is a gamble to suggest that he can come in and just like put up the Washington State numbers right away. But also, I think at this, you know, in this era of college football, coaches are stepping back more, like Ryan Day not being a play caller at Ohio State. Brent Venables taking over the defensive play calling duties is, you know, a definitely a shift in the other direction. But as he put it earlier this offseason, that's what he's good at. And if your job is on the line, maybe you don't want to, you know, you lost Zach Alley, you need to figure, you know, find a coordinator. Just take the job into your own hands. Take over the play calling duties. It's what you're good at. And with everything on the line, you've got to be good this year, and that's the best way to do it. So it's hard to argue when maybe the best defensive coordinator in college football is your head coach.
All right. Hey, the Realist Texas fan, I believe this is Cousin Brian. He gave us, he says, Texas next. Hopefully should be positive. Appreciate you, Cousin, for the donation. Let's do Texas next, Stephen. And yes, it is quite positive, as you would expect here. Here's a anonymous coach comments for them Longhorns. They could have one of the best defensive lines in the entire country. They have next level pass rushers and the size and physicality to win against the run. This program is one of the most efficiently run in terms of personnel, NIL, and the new era of the sport. So any surprises there, Stephen? I know they went heavy in the spring portal on the defensive line, beefing that up via the transfer portal. So would you agree with this, that that they're going to be pretty next level on the line of scrimmage?
Absolutely. Don't want to give too much away yet, but as the person who does all the position rankings, there is a very high likelihood that Texas is the number one defensive line and perhaps some other positions on defense in our magazine. So I would 100% agree with that. When you have Colin Simmons and what they added on the interior from the transfer portal, I think it's one of the best, if not the best, defensive line in the country.
Mm-hmm. And then the moment we've all, including Stephen, been waiting for, Arch Manning hype. Boy, how can we get out without hyping up Arch Manning here? Right now, the belief is that Arch Manning will elevate the offense immediately, and you can expect a much more dynamic scheme from Steve Sarkisian. This kid is a legit Heisman-level package. Stephen wrote that part. Provided he produces at that level. The offense will be even better. They're stacked with talent. If Manning blows up and goes to the league next year, this is still the program to chase. They're professionalizing in a way other programs aren't. My words, Stephen. I mean, just saying the next 10 national championship, the program to chase. I don't know if they're top two in the SEC right now, but that's just my opinion. But man, this coach, who I assume is Coach Lassen, just loves Manning here.
I was going to say, I promise you, I did not write the Arch Manning things in here, but if somebody was to be Arch Manning's hype person this year, it definitely would be me. I actually wrote a little bit for the magazine at the front and talking about the biggest storylines for this year. And one of them, I think, is Georgia versus Texas, like the new high-profile SEC rivalry. You know, we've had Alabama, LSU, we've had Alabama, Georgia, not going away from either one of those. But you kind of see the heavyweight starting to emerge. And the scouting, I think, kind of hinting at that, you know, talking about how effectively it's run in terms of NIL. Even if Arch Manning wins the Heisman Trophy and is the first pick in the draft, they're going to be really, really good again next year. So Texas has kind of joined that conversation of, like an Ohio State, like a Georgia, they lose a lot, but they reload quickly. So I think a full credit to Steve Sarkisian, really not a negative bit at all in these comments. I think the opposing coaches are 100% right about Arch Manning. I think he is going to elevate this offense. And there's a lot to like about this team. And let's just say some of us are predicting very good things for this team this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, I kid, but it's just wild. I mean, what about them being the program to beat? I mean, I think I understand what they're saying. Just Cousin Brian said it well. I mean, with the NIL, with how they manage it, I mean, they are taking everything that Alabama did under Nick Saban, that Sarkisian obviously learned there, and they're applying it. And I mean, I think, I'm not predicting this, but I don't think it's far-fetched, Stephen. Let's say Alabama takes a step down, which they've already done, but if they do that again or they have similar results and Texas takes a step up or does what they did last year and damn near went perfect in the conference, I don't think it's far-fetched to say Texas replaces Alabama as maybe not like a dynasty, because I think it's going to be hard to keep that consistency, but I think they will have surpassed Alabama, and it'll be Georgia and Texas that are the marquee programs in the conference.
I would agree with that. I think it's always dangerous to assume this in this portal era. And it's hard, I think, to reload consistently every year. But I think if I had to pick the two teams that are going to dominate the SEC, and I mean dominate, like win the title, SEC title, play for the SEC championship game, go far in the playoff, I would take Georgia and Texas right now. I think those mm-hmm. were set up really well for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, so who should we do next, Steven? Anyone you want to pick the next team to do here?
You want to make Cousin Shane happy and do Tennessee?
Always. I'm always down to make that bastard happy. All right, Tennessee comments here. Losing Nico isn't good. They're not replacing him with a more talented quarterback, and they're losing the QB who ran their system to a playoff game. But because of the way everything went down, I don't think anyone blames the program or Josh Heupel. And with the turnover on defense, Nico leaving makes a transition year a lot easier to stomach. The offense won't fall off a cliff. That system is effective at adjusting for personnel, even the quarterback. And I think if I'm a Tennessee fan, that's that last part, Steven, is what I'm really clinging to, is the fact that, you know, just look at Josh Heupel's track record. I mean, he kind of makes these quarterbacks. It's kind of ironic, though, the one he got with maybe the most fanfare. I don't want to say he was the worst, but, you know, it was the least successful year one. But there's something to be said for, you know, going back, Tennessee, Missouri, Oklahoma. I mean, on and on and on. All this guy does is produce elite quarterbacks.
Absolutely, and I think if they're, you know, the good news in these comments for Tennessee fans, there's kind of two things I took away. There's the program wide adaptability that Josh Heupel has showed. Last year it was running the ball and defense that took Tennessee to the playoff. It wasn't necessarily Nico's plays. He, you know, obviously he was a key part of that run, but I think that also gives you confidence that they can figure this out. Like this team was, I don't think was going to make the playoff even with Nico, and now take him away, that climb gets a lot steeper. But also I think you fall back to the confidence that, okay, Heupel and the staff have figured this out. They leaned on Dylan Sampson. The defense has gotten better. Surely they can figure out a way to manufacture some points. Their defense isn't going to totally fall off. And the second part of that is, while Joey Aguilar faces a pretty steep and very fast transition to the starting job, Heupel's offense, and I think there are some things they can do within that to ease him in here, and his track record of finding good quarterback play too. So there's kind of two parts to this. You trust Heupel to figure out the quarterbacks. You trust Heupel and the staff to adapt as the season goes along to either build around your strengths at quarterback or build around the rest of the team that's emerging. And this schedule in a kind of a transition year really helps with that.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, second part of anonymous comments on Tennessee. The bigger question, even after Nico, is replacing the defensive starters who carried them in big games. The secondary is legit and probably their strength right now. They're going to take a step back, and it won't be a playoff team this season, but the quarterback play won't be awful. So that's a little bit meaner way to say what was already said, that, you know, again, this system, this coach, they know how to get the most out of the quarterbacks that they've got to work with. But, this raises an interesting point, Stephen. Do you think that that Tennessee can replace some of these defensive standouts that have moved on? Because certainly, yeah, maybe not the household names, but I'm not sure Tennessee had a bunch of household names on defense other than James Pierce, and that he was a homegrown guy. And I think Tennessee's defensive coaches are very underrated and have really made a lot of elite players in the conference.
Yeah, I don't think this Tennessee defense is going to completely fall off. I do think the big question is going to be how healthy Jermaud McCoy is and how fast Tennessee can get him in the lineup. You know, there's that big showdown against Georgia in week three, and certainly they will need him later in the season when they play Alabama, when they play Oklahoma, when they play Florida. So, you know, in a year where we entered the season thinking Tennessee has major question marks in the secondary, it ended up being okay. And McCoy's emergence was a part of that. When you look at this defense, though, I mean, Arian Carter, you know, Joshua Joseph, there's still a lot of good pieces coming back. So there is some depth to replace. James Pierce won't be easy. But I think that's also kind of a cornerstone for Tennessee is to say, this defense isn't going to fall off early in the season. If Tennessee needs to, I think they can lean on this group, provided McCoy is 100% in the lineup and healthy and playing at the All-America level that we think he can.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, let's do, for Cousin JR, let's do Georgia. Man, I think he's going to like these ones here. Anonymous comments here in the Athlon Sports Magazine on Georgia. I don't think this is the same level of talent we've seen the last 3 or 4 years. I think you might see a decline, at least at first, on both lines of scrimmage. Defensively, it's still an elite group, but they're thin at linebacker. The biggest question mark will be the offense under Gunnar Stockton. They didn't chase any portal guys, so let's see if this kid can become elite. And if there's one thing I know, Steven, go check out our interview, Rusty Manziel. The guy said Mike Bobo loves him some Gunnar Stockton. So, hey, I don't know if Georgia fans actually want to hear that or not, but if this is the guy that your offensive coordinator has been clamoring for years and years and years, I think that tells me all I really need to know about Gunnar Stockton and how he can produce at a high level in this offense. What's your thoughts on all this?
I think Gunnar Stockton, I know the performances and the sample size were small against Texas and Notre Dame, but I think to be thrown into the fire against two really solid defenses, I think he proved a lot to me. Now I'd like to see the production's going to have to be better. He's just going to have to be a better player. But also I think I don't really anticipate a massive drop off from the passing game for Georgia. Their receivers are better. Also think that the rushing attack has got a chance to be better, provided the offensive line holds up, which is one of the questions here in the scouting. So I you know, Georgia to me is like Texas that I, you know, we mentioned it. They're going to lose some pieces. I know they have some questions, but I still just have a lot of confidence that Kirby Smart and this staff, they're going to push the right buttons this year. So I think you can count me in as a Georgia has a lot of questions, but I also would not be surprised if Gunnar Stockton is good enough to lift Georgia to play for the SEC title and potentially the national championship this year.
Mm-hmm. And here's part two of the Georgia comments. All eyes are on the offense. They have questions at pretty much every position group here. Is Gunnar Stockton a legit QB1? Can they replace the offensive line? Can the receiving core improve? Do they have a guy behind Nate Frazier in the backfield? Last season, they looked sort of muddled. Not bad, but you got the idea they weren't confident in one particular area of their attack. Interesting. I mean, this is... Steven, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Georgia win the SEC? But you know, this is what comes when you are king of the mountaintop and you're winning conference titles, and your fans are sitting here saying, "Man, what a disappointing year this was." This is where we're picking apart again. I'm not saying Georgia was like the most elite of elite, but I'm not sure they were awful either. Which they're not saying awful here, but I don't know. I think we got to have a little bit more confidence in Kirby and company, and I know you do.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about those comments is you think Georgia was 15th in the SEC against the run or in rushing offense. Their receivers had trouble catching the ball all season, and you know, I think they'll obviously Carson Beck was, you know, maybe one of the best quarterbacks in the country coming into last year, but maybe this offense rallies around Gunnar Stockton this year, and so. The fact that they won the SEC with all of those questions and probably could have advanced in the playoff had they had a healthy quarterback or Stockton had more experience, that's probably a scary thing if I'm and the rest of the SEC, because I'm looking at this receiving core going, it's got to be a lot better. You know, Zachariah Branch, Noah Thomas, Kobe Young. I mean, you're basically getting three big-time additions in the lineup to go with Dylan Bell and all the tight ends that they have. So it's also, it's really hard for me to believe that Nate Frazier and Josh McCray, the Illinois transfer, they're going to finish like at the bottom of the SEC again. Like this just, it's so unlike Georgia. But maybe we're talking about Gunnar Stockton and the receivers, but you know, I still think this offensive line is the big, you know, kind of question for me. I'm not one to doubt Cole Kublik. He knows offensive lines. He's got him ranked number one, so I'll believe him in that one. I would have him a little bit lower in the SEC, but it's also just that I think the talent and track record, eventually this group meshes. Four new starters, this is going to be the big question, I think. Everything kind of plays off of that. Can you run the ball? Can you protect Stockton? So I've got my eyes on this offensive line early in the year and seeing how fast it comes together.
Mm. All right. How about, if we're doing Georgia, Stephen, we might as well roll liquid. We might as well go with Florida here. Billy Napier and company. Anonymous coach comments on the Gators. This is a massive year for Billy Napier. He survived because of the changing politics of the game. And his buyout, but it ended up working out last season. Now he can show positive momentum with this group and start competing for the postseason. Defensively, they're young, but they finally got some guys in there that look elite. So, nothing hugely revealing here, but it is kind of hilarious, isn't it, to say, if not for the current landscape, this damn guy wouldn't even be the coach.
Yeah, it's never good to have coaching peers say, well, this guy wouldn't be at his job if it wasn't for this, and all this craziness going on in college football. But I think to Napier's credit, you know, he navigated all those choppy waters. They obviously played better at the end of last season, and a big reason was for the second comment there, the defense kind of turned in a corner. And so I think despite all of how Billy Napier maintained his job, I think there's some positive things to take away for Florida as kind of the coach kind of continues there.
Mm-hmm. All right, then part two of the anonymous comments here. If DJ Lagway continues to develop and stays healthy, they're going to continue to improve. Lagway could compete with Arch Manning for best quarterback in the league. You know, Steven didn't write this one. Lagway and that offensive line are legit enough to bring a true Florida offense if they can be in the hunt for a playoff bid and start scoring points like those old Gator programs. I think he'll be off the hot seat for a while. They don't have a killer at receiver, but they're solid at running back. So, again, a lot of praise, Steven, for them Florida Gators. According to these anonymous coach comments here, but this is giving me some more fuel for my offseason hype for them Gators.
If I knew DJ Lagway was 100%, Mike, I'd probably pick Florida to make the playoff this year.
Wow,
I know it's pretty bold, but I'm buying me some Florida Gator stock, and for some of the reason that the coach comment said there. I love this offensive line. Jake Slaughter, the best center in college football, four starters back. Jaden Ball kind of coming into his own at running back too. I do think that the comment about receivers is funny because I think Eugene Wilson is a big time player for Lagway. I think those two could really hit it off this year. You throw in J. Michael Sturdivant and some of the other weapons that they have. I like the Florida receivers. So all of these comments, you know, it's funny if we had done these comments in the middle of the season, probably how negative they would have been. But actually, despite all of the things that happened last year, the bad start, wondering what Napier's status was going to be, these actually ended up pretty positive for Florida. Really hard to kind of disagree too, given where they ended the season.
Right. So, again, this is interesting. This is another one similar to what I said about Oklahoma. I don't know. I've just got it in my head now, Stephen, where Florida and Oklahoma, they're like winning the offseason. They can do no wrong. They're preseason top 20 for sure. Some people got them both in the top 10. But all that does is raise expectations significantly for two coaches that have not really given us much evidence that they can get there. Now, that doesn't mean they can't, but you better deliver, and you better deliver immediately. Otherwise, the politics, like that comment said, it ain't going to save you this year. Your ass is out of here. If you go 6-6, you're either one of these guys, I think.
It's interesting to think about how the biggest reason for optimism for both teams might not be the head coach direction. It's the two quarterbacks. I mean, it's Lagway and Mateer, you know, it's like, yeah, they got question marks at head coach, but they've got these two quarterbacks that could make up for a lot too.
Yeah. All right. How about we do Alabama, Steven? This is pretty interesting here. None of his coach comments on the Crimson Tide. The expectations define this place. I think you'll see a competitive program that could end up in Atlanta and make the playoff. But this is a new era. Bama's not a surefire lock every season. The good news for them is that you didn't see a lot of key pieces test their market value in the portal. I think Alabama got very serious about NIL and personnel very quickly. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love this comment if I'm an Alabama fan, except for the part where they say, well, they don't own this board anymore. So, they'll be there, but it's not a given. Do you think that's good enough? Do you think that's good enough for Alabama fans, Steven, after nearly 20 years of dominating the sport?
I don't mean this like in a negative way to Alabama fans, but I do think that it would not surprise me if Alabama is more like a college football team, like a normal program now. They were elite under Nick Saban, and it was going to be hard to stay at that level. So a normal program probably goes 10-2, 9-3, a little bit more. Essentially, you know, they're just more beatable without Nick Saban. And I think this is a big year for Kalen DeBoer to kind of show they can get back to the playoffs. So I think the new normal is being a consistent playoff contender, contending for the SEC championship, but it might not be going 13-0, being the number one seed every year. But that being said, I do think that, you know, the comments about, retaining the roster, NIL, I think that's really important, because I think if you go back to the end of Nick Saban's tenure, there was some chatter that maybe Alabama had kind of fallen behind here and there on NIL. And so I think if you're retaining your roster, you're not losing much, and you're able to go out and bring in those additions you need to take that next step, that's a good sign for where this is going for Kalen DeBoer. And you just look at all the pieces. It just feels like, okay, last year required a little bit of a reset, but it really feels like, okay, now things are shaping back up for Alabama to be a playoff team. And perhaps maybe a little underrated going into the season.
Greg Byrne clinging his can with two coins. I mean, according to Steven, that really helped. All right, part two here for Alabama. Offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb coming over will make the offense better. Nick Sheridan's going to focus on development. He helped find and develop Michael Penix at Indiana. The biggest question will be quarterback, obviously, but they have a really solid offensive line, and the roster doesn't have any obvious holes to fill. They're going to compete for a playoff spot for sure. So this is another, playoff, another comment here that not only should, but will compete for a playoff spot. I mean, that should be the standard, not just this year, but every year, I think, for Alabama. Consistency, we gotta get that. Maybe Ryan Grubb will unlock some of that was missing last year. But I'm very high on what Alabama can do this offseason, and all these comments kind of back that up.
If the biggest question mark for Alabama is quarterback, and that is a place where Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb have really excelled at finding and developing guys, I think I feel really good if I'm Alabama coming into the season, because I also have a high degree of confidence that Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer are either going to turn Ty Simpson, Keelan Russell, Austin Mack into a very productive quarterback. So I think it just kind of continues kind of the positive trend here for Alabama. Also, I think the comment saying they're going to compete for a playoff spot, definitely fair. I think the expectation shouldn't be just to compete to be 10th. I think it should be to be in the top, six, and to host a game and to potentially win a game or two. They have the roster to do so. So I don't think competing is good enough. I think they have to make it. And also I think they have to at least win a game and, put some pressure on whoever they play in the quarters or potentially the semis.
Right. Well, speaking of competing, Steven, I don't know if you saw this, I believe it was late last week, but Hugh Freeze says they're going to compete for a bowl spot. Let's do Auburn next. Let's see if we can get there with old Hugh. Anonymous coach comments, watch out here. They finally have a quarterback who can run Hugh Freeze's system, and they've done some really impressive work in the portal. They're not an elite team by any stretch, but this is the most complete roster Freese has put together since he got there. I think this is a turnaround year for these guys, and they're definitely going bowling. All right, there you go. Gets you to six, Hugh. Year three, that's fantastic. But are you buying any of this BS here, Steven?
Mike, I have to tell you, as you were reading that comment, I actually kind of thought I could see myself, Hugh Freeze, anonymously telling somebody this one. It does seem like it is a little overly positive here for Auburn. But no, I'm buying some Auburn stock this year. I do think Jackson Arnold and the weapons they have, I think they definitely at least get to a bowl game. You're seeing Auburn get some buzz to be a top 25 team this year. I could buy that if things break right. So I'll buy this anonymous coach giving very high praise to Auburn. It's not named Hugh Freeze.
Okay. If you say so. Now, yeah, here's the interesting part. They finally have a quarterback. Honestly, Jackson Arnold is not a world beater. You can rattle him, but he's a day one upgrade, and the receiving room is really deep. The Georgia Tech kid, Eric Singleton Jr., is a legit baller and a big get. The offense is going to be better, and that's going to help the defense a lot more. DJ Durkin's done a really good job with these guys, and it's what kept them in a lot of their games last year. And, you know, one thing to consider, Steven, that I saw recently floating on Twitter over the week, but apparently Jackson Arnold was pressured on 41% of his dropbacks last year at Oklahoma, which I think was I don't think anyone else in the SEC touched that in terms of running for their life all year. So, you know, even in that aspect alone, that should really help him as he transitions to his first year at Auburn.
Absolutely. I think Auburn has, you know, a top six or seven offensive line in the conference. If you had to rank last year's Oklahoma, probably near the bottom. Also, this Auburn receiving core, I think, is one of the best five or six in the country. As this coach talks about here, Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech, to go with Cam Coleman and those other receivers, they are very deep at receivers. So already Jackson Arnold is in a much better position with his supporting cast than he ever was at Oklahoma last year. So I don't think, as the comments kind of stated, he doesn't have to be all SEC, but I think if you cut down on the mistakes that we saw at Oklahoma, he gives you, you know, some things here and there on the ground, like Peyton Thorne was able to. There's room for this offense to really take off. And it's kind of like Oklahoma, where Auburn is not starting so low, but they have a pretty solid floor from last season. If they can go up just a little bit, cut back on the mistakes, the defense continues to excel. Like this scouting said on DJ Durkin, I think that's good enough to get Auburn to a bowl. How well Jackson Arnold performs probably determines whether they're like seven wins good, or are they pushing for like eight or nine.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about LSU, Steven? I mean, again, the sky high hopes this year for the Tigers. Garrett Nussmeier is a legit talent, and they did a really good job finally getting serious in the portal to put weapons around him. They have playoff expectations here, and it's a better depth chart than he's had in Baton Rouge. If they are in the college football playoff, I think there's some serious pressure here. So playoff or bust, you've been hearing it all off season. And that's what the coaches are saying behind the scenes. I have to 100% agree with that.
Yeah, no disagreement here. I think given the fact that Garrett Nussmeier is one of the best quarterbacks in college football, they've gone into the portal to address some of their defensive questions. You've paid Blake Baker a ton of money. Ed Orgeron and Les Miles won national championships. Brian Kelly's a better coach. You better get to the college football playoff this year, given the roster situation and the dollars they spent. So, yeah, I think if Brian Kelly misses the playoff, there's big problems for him at LSU.
Yep. And then here's the second part of the anonymous coach comments for LSU. The big talk here is the way they're restructured. This isn't an autonomous coaching culture anymore. GM Austin Thomas has a huge role building the roster, and it showed this offseason. The internal evaluation of LSU football will look more professional. They're going to build Brian Kelly the best roster possible to go out and win games. They're going to take a significant step back on the offensive line, but they're better at the skill positions, Which, that's interesting, Steven, because all we heard all offseason, man, this offensive line, buddy, we're going to lead the SEC in rushing. We got this future NFL quarterback. And quite honestly, I thought the offensive line was a huge disappointment. So if they're taking a step back from a huge disappointment, you know, these are the things that, you know, again, not every situation can be compared, but, you know, I was all in on Ole Miss last year, right? As were many, with the pieces they had. And then, you know, to an extent that was validated with a bunch of players drafted, 10 wins, but ultimately fell short of the goals. But if you would have told me, Steven, that they had a first round quarterback, because I didn't think Jackson Dart was, I thought he was good. I think I even had him as maybe the top, I think in my offseason quarterback rankings, I did put him number one because I thought he'd be highly productive, but I didn't think he was a first round talent. But I say all that to say they had everything, right? But they didn't have a championship offensive line, and it killed them in a couple really big games. If LSU, if your hopes are playoff or bust and you're taking a step back from an offensive line, I realize had a couple NFL players on it, but in my mind was not that good. If you're taking a step back from that, that could be a unit that keeps you from reaching that college football playoff. And you know, if there's a reason why LSU fails to live up to the hype, and I'm saying even going 9-3 is probably a failure, it may be because of that offensive line.
Interesting to think about LSU and Georgia coming into the season with basically four new starters on the offensive line and thinking, you know, there's all this talent, and especially for LSU, the quarterback, Garrett Nussmeier, here comes Nick Anderson, Chris Hilton, Aaron Anderson, Barry and Brown loaded at receiver. And I think it is a cautionary tale a bit. Like, I don't think we should overlook this offensive line, because it's not just the offensive line. And this is something that you've pointed out a couple times the last couple of years, is they have to have better balance on offense. Like, Caden Durham and some of the other backs they got are really talented, but they were 16th in the SEC last season. So, you know, and I do this too. Like, I get enamored with big time quarterback play and love watching Garrett Nussmeier, but LSU's got to become a more well-rounded offense to some extent. They got to be able to have Caden Durham and that rushing attack get a little better at short yardage, whatever, churning out a little bit more production, but also protecting him. Like, how do you lose Will Campbell and Emory Jones, two standouts at tackle, when they're both gone? I think maybe the answer here is the defense really just takes off. And I think there's a chance that it could. I think it's going to be a lot better. I think the question is, what is the ceiling for this group this year? Because the portal additions are really, really solid.
Mm-hmm. Now, another team, Steven, that could be a playoff or could just be teasing us like they always do. How about Texas A&M, Steven? They didn't finish strong, but the turnaround here was remarkable. As coaches, we talked about the culture at this place really falling to rock bottom under Jimbo Fisher. You turn on the tape from Mike Elko, and those kids are playing harder, playing smarter. That's coaching, but it's culture. It's the want to. Mike Elko understands Texas A&M, and eventually this could be the most physical, aggressive team in the league. Buddy, that's exactly what you want to hear if you're a Texas A&M fan, because quite frankly, that's where the 8-4 jokes always come from, because they always start 6-0 or 7-1 and they wilt down the stretch. But that's not what physical, aggressive teams do. They finish strong. And man, we all get enamored with how the season ended, and man, what a joke, 8-4, yada yada yada. But they were on their way to wild success that I certainly didn't see coming right out the gate. And if they can recapture that and just get tougher at the tail end of the season, they might have something special here in College Station.
You know, one thing I always think about with college football is some teams, the progress isn't necessarily like straightforward. You can't just draw a straight line from, 7 to 10 to playoffs. Sometimes you have to go from 8 wins to 8 wins to 12 wins. You know, every team is just different. I bring that up because I thought the coach's comments were really positive for Texas A&M, because I think some people are going to look at the end of the season and go, yeah, they totally collapsed. I don't look at that, though. I mean, yeah, they lost to Notre Dame in the first game of the season. Notre Dame played for the national championship. They lost to South Carolina a week after a big win over LSU. They had a huge comeback and nearly beat Auburn on the road a week before they were looking ahead to Texas. And the bowl game, yeah, but I don't read too much into bowl games. It's not as bad maybe as some people are kind of making it out to be that end of the stretch of the season. But I think what behind the curtain, I think, is what a lot of coaches are starting to say is that debacle of a culture under Mike's favorite coach, Jimbo Fisher, it's totally different now under Mike Elko. You're starting to see things trend in the right direction. Now, that has to translate to wins at some point. But I think if you're a Texas A&M fan, these are kind of the things that you want to hear. You want to hear some of these behind the scenes things. And it sounds like it's going well for Texas A&M and other coaches are noticing it.
Mm-hmm. And then the second part of the anonymous coach comments on A&M, they have a great run game and the entire offensive line should be back. Marcel Reed's ceiling is still to be determined. He showed a lot of good and some bad last season. Mike Elko is going to be the more involved in the defense, I think. The need position in the offseason was defensive line, so watch for that. So I like these too, Stephen, where they kind of, you know, they say, hey, watch, you know, you got to really keep your eye on one position group, see where they're at there, because, this is absolutely right. They lost several defensive linemen to the NFL. Will they take a step back there? That'll be something to watch here. But, you know, I keep coming back to Marcel Reed because I think he is, I don't know how good he is either, but I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for. And this comment kind of echoes that, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to continue kind of our mystery players here, it feels like Marcel Reed is definitely one of them. And I think it was hard to evaluate him last year for me because of the receivers at A&M. You know, I felt like they needed more, you know, kind of game breakers, difference makers. Well, they got that now. You go out and support your young quarterback with guys like Mario Craver and Kevin Concepcion. They got some dudes at receiver who can make some plays. So with an offensive line that's got an argument to be in the top, you know, five of the SEC and a rushing attack that goes three running backs deep, improved receivers, it's all there for Marcel Reed to take a big step forward. So I think his progress probably determines whether Texas A&M is like 7-5 or whether they can pull off an upset and get into that 10-2 conversation and be in the playoff consideration.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, how about Arkansas? We haven't done them yet. Anonymous comments for the Razorbacks. Last year, they did just enough to keep Sam Pittman off the hot seat, but it will be just as difficult this season. Sam has a ton of respect, but this roster isn't going to separate them. They need better offensive line play, and they don't have SEC-level talent up front on defense. So, you know, if you're not good on the offensive line and you don't have elite talent on the defensive line, good luck, buddy. In this conference, that's what separates you each and every Saturday. But man, these are tough, but I think fair comments.
I think they are fair. And I think the defensive line for Arkansas is one of those groups that definitely gives me a lot of concern this season because Landon Jackson was the best player and he's gone off to the NFL. How do they replace him? Also, how do they, you know, this offensive line has three new starters too. Like, how does this group mesh? And so this is a team with a lot of questions and it's not quite South Carolina, but I think every time that you look at the schedule and you look at the depth chart and you look at the returning personnel and you go, yeah, they lost a lot at receiver. They've got some questions on defense, but Taylen Green plus Petrino in year two probably equals good things. So line of scrimmage with this schedule and some of the defenses and offensive lines they're going to face really under the microscope here for Arkansas early and late next season.
Mm-hmm. And then part two for Arkansas, the receivers are solid and Taylen Green is solid, or Talon, as some people call him, but they couldn't protect him and they would get into trouble in third and obvious situations. I don't think they're competing at a top level in NIL right now. You look at the portal exits, and it's really hard for a mid to low tier program in this league to sustain bowl eligibility with this many extra holes to fill. If they can find a better O-line, I think the offense can carry them back to that 6 or 7 win level, which I think, again, I think this is all fair comments, Stephen, but I think that's the problem right there, where if you're an Arkansas fan, and hopefully this is all wrong, but this is kind of the vibe I'm picking up. I don't know about you, Steven, but the vibe is like, man, if you know, maybe we can steal a game or two and we can get to six, we can get to seven, but that's just a rough, rough place to be in as a fan, because you don't want to be where, like, man, if we get lucky, we could be 500. Like, that's the worst spot to be. I feel like I think that's even worse than being just pathetic and knowing you're going to be bad.
Arkansas is kind of stuck, I think, going into the season. And I think a lot of it goes back to that one comment. You know, if they're not competing at a top level in NIL and you look at who they're losing and you're just having to shuffle the roster, like, you need an opportunity to retain the guys that you have and then you'd be able to build on that with portal additions to either fill some of your needs, but also to elevate some of the groups that you have coming into the season. So I think that's part of the problem, you know, is like, essentially you have Taylen Green coming back, but you lost so much that you're just trying to struggling to replace those guys. And you didn't get a chance to build on last year's success. If they returned more, they could build on that. And I think they would have a chance to maybe aim a little bit higher. So they're kind of stuck of they're rebuilding, but they're really not bad. And, you know, they're not good enough to probably be a 10-win team or a playoff contender outside of just everyone just missing on this roster and Taylen Green going crazy this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you who's not missing, and that's Cousin Rick. He's back. $20. Giga Maggies. Love the show. Cousin Rick, we appreciate you, buddy. I hope you appreciated those A&M comments. They got me thinking that A&M's going to make the college football playoff just for you, Rick. And then we also got, I think we got Bo here, Steven. Cousin Bo, Mike, just say, Mississippi State is far away the classiest program in the SEC. I wish I was a Mississippi State fan so bad so I could be like that Brandon Walker, I guess. But no, I do not wish, and I don't wish that upon anyone. But because he gave us $20, Steven, let's do Mississippi State comments here. And these are, if I remember, these are pretty brutal. When Blake, well, maybe not. When Blake Shapen was healthy last season, the offense wasn't bad at all. He knows how to run that system. This was a thin roster to start with, and then they were hit hard in the portal. Their biggest weakness outside of the defense is receiver, but they've portaled some guys who will start on the line right away. I think they'll improve on offense this season. So there you go. Mississippi State, again, maybe not as brutal as I remember, but what are your thoughts on these?
Mike, I think they're pretty fair. I think if you know, coming into the season, I think the belief ought to be Jeff Lebby's second year plus a healthy Blake Shapen gives the offense a chance to be better than last year. And I think that's kind of what this coach is getting at. The other part is, you know, I think Jeff Lebby definitely inherited a roster in transition. And I thought last year was year zero. This year might even be like year 0.5 because of how many guys they portaled in and lost. So I don't think anything too surprising there. I think if anything, I think kind of an understanding of the situation Jeff Lebby is walking into.
Mm-hmm. And then here's the second part for Mississippi State. Here we go. The defense is legitimately bad. This is the ultimate line of scrimmage league, and they were the worst defensive line we saw last season. I think every one of their starters will be portaled, and some of those guys are very good. But even if they take that next step in the offensive system, the defensive front and run game defense have to improve dramatically. You don't have that in the league, and you're dead. And I believe Coach Steven Lassen wrote these ones because he's a big Coleman Hutzler fan.
Yeah, that's right. I think this is pretty spot on. I think Coleman Hutzler is probably one of the lower rated defensive coordinators at the power conference level. They gave up over 200 rushing yards a game last season, had trouble getting to the quarterback, gave up almost 40 points in conference play. I mean, I could keep going on the bad stats, Mike, but they were really bad on this side of the ball last year. And it is going to take a massive step forward by the offense, just simply scoring 40 to 45 points every week to overcome that. They might just be better by default this year. It's kind of hard to be that bad 2 years in a row. And I do think the quantity they brought in from the portal is probably a good thing because they basically just brought in a bunch of dudes to compete in the two deep and they're deeper. I just don't know if this group is going to be good enough to get them to a bowl game. It feels like it's going to be year three if Mississippi State gets there.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about Kentucky? Anonymous coach comments, Stephen, the recipe for Kentucky success under Mark Stoops isn't there right now. Unless they hit on every portal guy they brought in, and Zach Calzada is significantly better than he was the last time in the league. They weren't aggressive or physical on the lines last season. They didn't really play like those Mark Stoops teams that would beat you up. I would agree with 100% of that, Stephen. And that's kind of my biggest issue with Mark Stoops and the current state of his Kentucky football program, because if you don't have this to hang your hat on, what in the world do you have? And I'm just not seeing much right now.
I think when you look at that comment, you think about program identity. And I think about Mark Stoops and those successful teams. And if anything, you thought, okay, they're going to be tough at stopping the run. They're going to be good on the offensive line. And both those groups have regressed in recent years. So I think when we start thinking about, like, how is Kentucky one play away from being winless in SEC play last year? I think we start there. I think we look at the foundation in the trenches. And yes, you know, they've got to get some consistency long-term at quarterback and find an answer that's not a transfer. But at the same time, this program really needs to get back to its foundation of building the offensive and defensive lines and excelling there.
Mm-hmm. All right, and here's the second part for old see what I did there with Stoops with his hands. You'll see it in a second. Mark Stoops doesn't seem like the guy who's going to radically adjust to win in this NIL and portal era, and it's starting to show up on the field. This is a make or break year for the future of this program. He's got a very friendly contract that makes him hard to fire, but right now it's hard to look at the overall roster here and think they're keeping pace with programs like Vanderbilt and South Carolina, who changed with the time. So crossroads year, buddy, I think it was crossroads a couple of years ago for old Stoops, but they're 100% right with the contract that he's another one, you know, 40 plus million to fire him. Kentucky maybe doesn't have that right now. And if they did, I think maybe they'd have a new coach if they did.
Mike, I think the telling comment to me is that second quote on this slide. You know, that we're talking about how Kentucky is having trouble keeping pace with Vanderbilt and South Carolina, who changed, adapted to NIL and portal. I mean, that right there is like, you know, those teams are kind of clustered together, you know, in these like early predictions. I think for most years, you know, they would always be centered and, you know, whatever, 6 through 14, now 6 through 16. I mean, if you're falling behind Vanderbilt and South Carolina, isn't that a big reason to be very concerned about the direction of this coaching staff come into this year?
Well, and I would even disagree with you, Stephen, because because of these coach comments, I had to pull down the coach their records over the years, but I believe, you know, obviously went 4-8 last year and 7-6 the 2 years prior. Those 7-6 teams, they were preseason top 25. So I think Kentucky was even at a higher spot than South Carolina and Vanderbilt. I don't know, South Carolina just had a hell of a year, so South Carolina's there now, but Kentucky was well in front of Vanderbilt and South Carolina, I thought. And they have lost footing to those programs. So it's even more damning, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also they just had the 10-win season in 2021 finished, and even a 10-win season in 2018. So just talk about like recent success. They were in a much better spot, certainly a much better spot, like in the minds of, I think, us who cover college football. So to go from 10 wins to immediately the next 2 years regression in wins to 7 and then 4, with, like we talked about, just one win in SEC play is pretty alarming. It's a pretty alarming and very fast fall off.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, I believe the last one we got here, Stephen, Vanderbilt, anonymous coach comments, Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine, on sale now, go buy it. This is why you invest in NIL over facilities. This is why you have to be serious about personnel. Vanderbilt's coaches didn't suddenly learn how to coach. Clark Lee is a fantastic, sharp defensive mind, and now he's got a roster capable of winning games in the league. With the attention on them, it will be a lot harder to to win games. But I thought these were fascinating, Stephen, just the fact that, you know, he's saying the quiet part out loud, but you got to invest. You got to have the talent. You got to have the players. You got to spend the money. And, I mean, there's literally no better example than Vanderbilt, who just got raided. They're virtually... Here was the sad part about Vanderbilt, and I know, Stephen, you're well aware of this, but I don't know SEC fans if they how close they pay attention to Vanderbilt, but Clark Lee and company, they've got a pretty good eye for talent, and they were bringing guys in, playing them young. They were going the old school route where you know year three, year four, these guys together, it's all gonna click, and they're gonna be competitive. But what happened? These guys come in, and then after 1 year, after 2 years. They're all hitting the portal because they're getting better offers. And then he's sitting here with nothing to show for it. That may have worked 5-10 years ago, but it's not going to work now. And at least they had the foresight to realize that and bring in some talent.
I think what may have happened to those departures may have actually been, in a way, kind of a good thing, because it kind of said to, they may have got the right people to get awake and go, hey, we've got to retain this roster, and we've got to get more active in going out and actually using NIL to bring in talent. So while it was bad and it caused a big time regression, I think it kind of Vanderbilt kind of knows what they got to do. And I thought the two comments were pretty interesting, because it almost says, you know, it's what in praise and for Clark Lee and what they've been able to do in the process now. But on the other side of it, saying, you know, it's going to be harder. Like, this is just Vanderbilt. It's hard to maintain this winning track record year over year. I think Vanderbilt could be a better team, but it might not show in the win column this year. So I think on one side, you feel like the program is going in the right direction now after last season, not knowing where it was, but also thinking that, yeah, it might be hard to run back last year's win total just because of it's how difficult the SEC is.
Yeah, well, it's not difficult right now, Stephen, for Cousin Rick, who just gave us $100, Stephen. He says, sharing my Aggie baseball winnings with the cousins. You're the man, Rick. I was trying to find the score of the game. I was going to shout him out. Let me know. I'm on Twitter right now. Oh, yeah. Okay. A&M beat Auburn 3-2. Curse of Hugh Freeze. I know it's a completely different sport, but I'm sure he had something to do with that loss. But thank you, Rick. You're the man.
It feels like an Auburn game could end up 3-2 with Hugh Freeze.
Diego Pavia kicks the field goal after Vanderbilt's kickers gets knocked out. Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be great. You know what?
Oh, man. I wouldn't put anything past like a crazy safety something. Hugh Freeze, like, forgets a play call and the ball goes out of the back of the end zone as they're trying to call timeout. Who knows? Stay tuned for craziness at Auburn.
So anything else, Steve? So we hit on all these teams. Can't thank you enough for sharing this information. I mean, this is quite literally one of the highlights of the offseason for me. Man, I love getting this look into a window into these teams. You know what?
Absolutely. I mean, you and I just talked through all 16 teams. May not agree with some of the coaches' comments, but at the same time, I find them to be very interesting, just to get the peek behind the curtain on what the coaches are thinking, what they're seeing, and compare it to what we think coming into this year. So I always, you know, whether it's the SEC or any conference, it's another layer of like intel in building these teams as we get ready to come up on the 2025 season. So I just find all these to be really fascinating.
Yeah, how about this from Gator Jack? Appreciate you, Gator. Let me play a little ching for you here. Ching. Vandy surprised folks last year. Teams will be prepared for them this year. Go Gators! What's your thoughts on that, Stephen? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I do. I do think Vanderbilt's offense probably caught some people off guard. And I think certainly Alabama early in the year, you know, if you look at their offense later in the season, they kind of tailed off a little bit. Now, you could also look and say Pavia was hurt. Maybe Vanderbilt this year just having another offseason to tweak and build, this offense could overcome some of that. But I do think when you look at their schedule and SEC play, South Carolina, Alabama, LSU, Missouri, Texas, Auburn, Kentucky, and Tennessee, there is a very good chance that Kentucky might be the only team in SEC play that they are going to face that doesn't spend some time in the top 25 this year. That is very difficult. That is, I think, why their win total was sitting there at 4.5. They could be a better team. It just may not show up in the win column.
Right. And particularly if you start 1-2, which I'm not saying is a given with Vanderbilt, but you got to believe Virginia Tech is they're going to be playing with a lot of pride at home after getting embarrassed. But again, losing to Vanderbilt by the end of the year, we've come to learn, you know, that maybe is not as embarrassing. But at the time, Vanderbilt was seen as awful. I believe Virginia Tech was like a 13-point favorite, something like that, and they lost that game. So that's going to be tough. South Carolina, last year, that was not even really competitive. South Carolina crushed Vanderbilt. Different teams, different year. I get all that. But, it's going to be an uphill battle just to have a winning record after Georgia State, you know, the first month of the season.
Definitely cannot lose to Georgia State again if Vanderbilt wants to go to a bowl game. Also, I would think if I'm betting on this one, and this is probably one of the reasons, if you ask me 4.5, would you take the under or over? I would just take the over, banking on Pavia pulls off an upset somewhere. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they run the table in non-conference, beat Kentucky, and then could pick off Auburn, Missouri, or somebody else at home this year in a game where they're not favored. So while it is an uphill battle, this is, if I was to pick, I would project Vanderbilt to probably sneak their way into a bowl game, almost as a bet on Diego Pavia.
Well, all right, Steven. So any other closing thoughts? I mean, you probably need to go home. Well, you're already home, but go home, get some rest, take a nap after all this work you've been doing.
Mike, it has been a very long off season to, you know, once we end one season and we start working on the magazine, you know, basically while the playoff is going on, and we've kept the accelerator at like 100 miles an hour. So I am glad it's on newsstands. It's going to be up. It's up on our online store at athlonsports.com. I'm excited for everybody to pick it up, and please reach out. Let me know if you got any feedback. Love to hear it, good or bad, or whether you agree or disagree with our rankings in there.
Yeah. And we'll put a link in the show notes. It'll be the pinned top comment. Once this video, once we're done with the live version of it, you'll be able to access that. So you can order your own Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. If you do it online, you get to pick your cover, which is pretty cool. Nice little feature there. But anything else, Stephen?
Mike, I should say, I don't pick the teams on the cover. I did pick the players. So if your team isn't represented, I'm sorry. That's kind of out of my control. But I think our covers are pretty cool. I think we've got, what, nine SEC teams represented, 8 or 9 of them. So still, I know we got a ways to go there to get them all, but I think those are pretty sharp looking covers.
Yeah, so moral of the story, don't blame Steven. He's not responsible. That's the theme of every one of these shows.
Unless it's the rankings. You can blame me for the rankings and all of the predictions like inside the magazine.
Yeah. All right. Steven, thank you so much again. I can't thank you enough for all this outstanding information. That's going to do it. And I don't 100% know when the next show is going to be, because we're going to be down in Destin. The plan is to be doing live shows on the beach. So hopefully nothing changes, but fingers crossed, technical difficulties could very well apply. So, be on the lookout for the channel. Like, subscribe, share, all that. We really do appreciate each and every one of you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.